The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 16th of February, 2021. On the podcast today, I have Jonathan Rowland, Executive Chairman of Mode Global Holdings, MOD, explains the business model and milestones coming up. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV business news correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. And as always, I have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of their content. In fact, there's the SP Angel Morning View. There's Omega Diagnostics jumps following a rapid antibody test review. There's Avacta Group receives excellent initial data from ongoing COVID-19 clinical studies. Plus, is our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Avacta, up 17% to 181 pretty much. Biggest faller, Tristel, down 10%. 0.45 pence to £6. Oh, did they have news out? I wonder why that is. What's the news there? Issue of equity? No, not a lot. Just down. Check out those lists right there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jonathan Rowland, Executive Chairman of Mode Global Holdings, MODE, ticker there. Jonathan, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've seen you mentioned quite a bit. You've been on the most followed list on Vox Markets quite a few times. A lot of people are excited about you. So before we get into a bit more depth here, could you just give us a brief overview as to what Mode is all about, please?
Sure. We floated the company in October last year, and we are basically, to keep a very simple sort of explanation of who and what we are, we're trying to create a super app within an ecosystem, very similar to what Alipay in China has done. So being able to manage all of your financial needs and services, plus more, all in one simple, easy-to-use, safe, secure application on your phone. Two sort of sides to the business. One is our Mode wallet that's been up and running since almost 12 months, which allows you to deposit money from your bank account into our wallet using faster payments in the UK. Takes very, very small amount of time to transfer across, maybe 90 seconds, 2 minutes. You go through a KYC process that takes, you know, less than 5 minutes. And then you can go into the app and you can manage your Bitcoin, your sterling and your euros. And you're able to buy Bitcoin on the app very easy, very simply to use. And we seem to be one of the cheapest in the markets. So we only charge 0.99% per trade. And then on the other side of the business, we have a payment solution, which is deployed in Q2 of this year, which allows us to basically allow the users of the wallet to seamlessly pass across to the payment system using open banking and acquire things through merchants that work with us through a very easy-to-use QR code-based application. So an ecosystem and an app which allows you to go from one end of the consumer to the other end of the merchant, all in one seamless transaction, lower cost, more secure, safer, and a great experience for customers.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, of course, it's a big market, and you know, we're hearing on a daily basis like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies hitting new highs and achieving that mainstream press and coverage. And so I suppose there's a lot of demand for this. So I mean, do you hope to get a mainstream audience? So what's your target here? Who's your audience?
Our audience is primarily UK based at the moment, and our sort of demographic is under 40, usually male dominated, usually in the south of England, especially around London. That's not what we're focusing on entirely, but that's what is coming through. Mm-hmm. What we're focusing on is giving an easy adoption to new modern financial products and services. So, you know, we're doing things very differently from what was done 5 years, 10 years, 20 years ago. Walking into a bank in the high street is completely different now. It's all done to basically a mobile phone with very modern technology. And we're trying to educate people of all ages and all skill sets when it comes to using these things. So the applications and the products that we provide are primarily very easy to use and give the user sort of comfort of trust of what we're doing. So we're trying to appeal to a wider audience, but at the moment it's the millennials, the Gen Zs, the under 40s who are very adept at using these things, obviously in the majority of our user base at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So let's go through the last, you know, couple of bits of news here. So you officially launched your Android app, and so how big is that going to be? I mean, when did you do that? 12th of February? In fact, that was my birthday last Friday. So how is that going so far? Is it a good take-up in that?
Yeah, I mean, the Android app was always going to be a big winner for us because, I mean, broadly speaking, 50% of people use iOS and Apple phones and 50% of people use Android. So if you look at it like that, we doubled our market potential on Friday when we launched it. The take-up was in the thousands, low thousands, just over the weekend. There was a lot of pent-up demand for it. Mm-hmm. So in a great sort of a slew of new customers coming in. And the apps, you know, the feedback from the users is very easy to use, very comfortable app to put money into and buy Bitcoin and manage your assets. So, yeah, it's gone very well since Friday. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, do you offer sort of rewards, is it interest on holding Bitcoin? Or how does that work?
We offer rewards on Bitcoin that's held. So at the moment, if you buy Bitcoin on our application, you will receive a reward-based loyalty program, as it were, where you can earn up to it's 3 or 4 or 5% on what you hold in Bitcoin in the application.
Wow! So if I was to download it now. I mean, like you mentioned there, Southeast blokes and getting into it. So would I be just basically using it to, you know, trade cryptocurrency or just hold it? Or what's the main feature? Would I be, you know, what's the main selling point for me, for example?
Well, the company's evolving. So, you know, the main selling points are changing as we grow. So, as I said, we're trying to become an ecosystem where you can do everything in your wallet and seamlessly cross over onto the payment side and acquire things through online shops or offline shops. Mm-hmm. But today, if you came into our wallet, what we're seeing is there's that compared to other challenger banks, the average customer deposit in Monzo or Starling or Revolut is somewhere around £200 or £300 or £400. Mm-hmm. With us, we're seeing 10 times that because people look at it more as a opportunity to dip their toe into a new asset class, which is Bitcoin. So they're sending over to us, you know, £3,000, £4,000, £5,000 rather than a small amount so that they can allocate some of their assets to Bitcoin, try Bitcoin out. So we're seeing a lot higher customer value in our application per customer. And that's great news because when we deploy the payment system very shortly, it means we have a much higher amount of customer deposits, for want of a better word, to actually utilize to go across and buy things on the payment side. So just interesting the way that the app's been utilized. Rather than having a few hundred pounds in your account, people are paying a few thousand buying Bitcoin. Bitcoin's gone up a lot, as you know, since mm-hmm. the end of last year. So their stakes in Bitcoin have all appreciated as well. So I think the average balance we have per customer is somewhere in the £4,000 to £5,000, whereas other competitors have them in the hundreds. So it's a good base to start when you deploy a payment system and offer goods through merchants. You have a captured market of much higher user balance, so it's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And what are you hoping to achieve? Like, say, you know, next 6-12 months, what's the milestone to tick off? Is it sort of accounts opened, or what's your main sort of points you're looking at?
Yeah, I think customer growth is the main thing for us. We're very cost conscious. We're not going out there to throw millions and millions at marketing. We're doing it more slowly. So, you know, customers are sort of our primary focus. What will it make us to profitability? You know, we've assumed that over 5 years we will have in excess of 1 million customers utilizing the platform. So over the next 12 months, we've got a lot of new sort of products coming and functionality to the applications. We'll probably look at different cryptocurrencies. We only do Bitcoin now. Mm. Ethereum would be an obvious second for us. So we're looking into that. We're looking at peer-to-peer payments. We're looking at different reward schemes. And we're working with merchants now to launch our very exciting payment system.
Yeah, and what do you see? I mean, who are your competitors? I know PayPal had launched in the US with Bitcoin. I think it's coming over here soon, isn't it? Is it over here yet or not?
They've said that they're deploying it shortly in the UK. Yes.
And does that bother you? Or do you think they are, you know, it's going to take away your potential customers?
Not really, because we're deploying a system over open banking. PayPal is still very much credit card and bank account driven. We're using the new open banking protocols in the UK to allow us to do things much more seamlessly and safer, secure, and at much less cost to merchants. So I think there's room for several people, to be honest. PayPal's system they use is born out of technology and things that they've done over the last 20 years. We're using very, very new technology and open banking in the UK, which we believe we're going to be the first, if not one of the first, to deploy over open banking.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned the, you know, profitability. How far is that off? And do you have a pathway to it?
Yeah, I think profitability is obviously fundamental to any business. However, we do have to invest in this business for growth and to attract our user base. So I think we've estimated that profitability will come after 3 years. We're in the first year of that 3 years now. So that's the sort of time frame we're looking at.
Absolutely. And cash-wise now, I mean, I assume you've got enough cash, have you, for the foreseeable?
We've got plenty of cash, yeah. And we've also got, as you might have seen from some of our announcements, we invested 10% of our cash reserves into Bitcoin back in October.
Nice.
When the price was, you know, 10,000, 11,000, it's 49,000 today. So we've had a huge gain on our treasury position in Bitcoin. So that's added to our cash reserves.
Yeah. Do you still hold that? Or do you, how does that work when you hold Bitcoin? How much do you hold? When do you sell?
I mean, we still hold it, yes. Because we believe in the Bitcoin network, and ultimately we believe that our ecosystem will be able to run on Bitcoin payments as well as normal money, we don't really see any point in selling it. It wasn't done for a gain purpose. It was done for, like Tesla. You know, Tesla bought it to utilize in their sale of their products, buying and selling of their products. We see it as the same. So we don't really see it as a asset that we would sell, because we see we can utilize it in the future. But, you know, we're showing a nice gain on it now, but no plans to sell it at this stage.
Yeah, yeah, marvelous stuff. Okay, then. Every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. To get on that list, obviously, people have to hit that follow button. So, Jonathan, right now, if people are listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Mode Global Holdings to their watch list, please.
Okay, I think when you look at the company, we're very experienced in Bitcoin and payments. The team has a lot of experience. So if you want to follow a company that has experience in the cryptocurrency and payments side, that's us. Secondly, I would say our shares compared to competitors and peers are undervalued, in my opinion. And I think there's, you know, if you want to invest in or learn about companies on the public market that have exposure to consumer Bitcoin offerings, we are it. There's no other company in the UK that has it. We are it. And thirdly, we believe Bitcoin is going to appreciate, to continue to appreciate with the adoption. And I think if you want an easy place to utilize or use Bitcoin or follow a Bitcoin company with a Bitcoin story, as well as everything else we're doing, we are it, Justin.
Marvellous stuff, yeah. It's getting, well, it's not coming back, is it? It looks like Bitcoin is really strong at the moment. Marvellous stuff, Jonathan. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of Crypto Trader, but he's like something from the Ark. I always have problems getting on Skype, and he said to me just then, apparently when I did an interview with the BBC, they said it's better on the internet rather than the telephone line.
Look, Skype used to be worse than telephone lines, right?
When was that? When it was dial-up? When it was dial-up, was it? When it was dial-up internet?
Like 5 years ago, I think.
Remember the dial-up? You stick to 5 minutes to connect to the internet. And then you're on the super fast highway, man. Okay, so Bitcoin, right? It's showing showing signs of strength, isn't it, there? You're out, are you?
You noticed. No, I'm
You liar, you fibber. You are a big fibber, Glenn.
Am I?
Yeah, you pee your pants. When it drops about 5%, you pee your pants and get out.
No, that's not fair, is it, Justin?
You bought it. When you first buy Bitcoin, dirty trader.
I'm not a day trader.
No, you're a minute trader. When's the first time you bought Bitcoin again?
The first time I ever bought it, it was like $300, something like that.
Wow.
Like many years ago.
That is a 163 bagger.
Yeah, it's been a good few years for the Bitcoiners.
So if you'd put, you know, 10 grand in that, you have 1.6 million now.
Yeah.
Have you in more than that trading?
But then how many people were putting 10 grand in it when it was $300?
Have you in more than that trading, though?
Because it was like, it was nothing. It wasn't a big deal.
Answer my question. Have you in more than that trading?
Have I earned what?
In Bitcoin. Have you earned more than that trading in Bitcoin? 1.6 million.
I don't, as you know, I don't disclose my own personal, like, net worth and stuff like that. So...
You're not disclosing net worth. I'm just saying, have you earned more than that in Bitcoin trading? I'm not asking you for all the other trades.
That reveals financial information. I don't talk.
You've made a lot better in other trades as well. You've done millions of other trades. You're a dirty trader. You trade about 17,000 times a day. All I'm saying is, have you done better than that in Bitcoin on its own?
What do you mean in Bitcoin on its own?
Well, have you made 1.6 million?
I'm not just saying.
Just trading Bitcoin.
I'm not getting into it, Justin.
That's a no.
Right?
That's a no.
Yes, and I'm not saying no because I don't want people to know how much money I've got. Is that a crime? I mean, how much money have you got? You're going to like tell me your total net worth now. Tell everybody.
No, you can ask me about a trade, and I'll tell you. I'm asking about
you're
one.
You're asking me about such a large trade that it would basically divulge pretty much my net worth.
Are you saying so? Okay, so
I ain't doing it. Hang on. I ain't falling into your clever little trap.
Hang on. So of all the trades you do,
can we talk about what Bitcoin's been doing this
week? No, this is more interesting. Of all the trades you do,
it's not interesting what I do. It's interesting to hear about what's going on with Bitcoin and what its prospects are for the future.
No, people. No.
Because there's been a lot of big news this week.
Listen now. Listen. People relate to people.
Hear me now.
People relate to people, right? I can assume what I'm trying to prove to you is you've done better being a clean, honest, wholesome, hold 'em as long as you can investor than a dirty, you know, selling when it dips, pee your pants trader. That's all I'm saying, Ben. That's all I'm saying.
I mean,
if you put a grand in there, if you put a grand in there, a grand, okay.
Hypothetically, a hypothetical person who bought Bitcoin back in 2015 and just held it ever since would obviously be a rich person. But the problem is that back in, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Everybody listening to this thinks, oh yeah, that's what I should have done. But back in 2015,
very
few of the people listening would have taken that decision based on the information that they had at the time. So the point is, who the hell was going to put in £10,000 apart from a very zealous believer in a totally unproven technology at that point in time that nobody was interested in.
Yeah, but hang on a sec. There was a fervent belief in Bitcoin from the start. But if you just one thing I've learned, right, about tech and new tech is that the trick is to get in early, don't put too much in, you don't have to, and just leave it. And then and you can do that with 100 different things, really. You know, and one of them will go nuts.
So you wouldn't have put in 10,000. That's the point, isn't it? You would have put people back in 2015, when they bought some Bitcoin, they were buying like 100 quid's worth, not 10,000 quid.
Let's say you bought a grand's worth, right? 10 cutting edge ideas, leave a grand in, right? You'd have 163 grand here. And if you're done with the Ethereum as well, you'd probably have a lot more than that. So I'm saying buying and holding, Glenn, time and time again, is proven to be the way to make money, build wealth. You know, if you look at the top 100 richest people in the world, none of them are traders, dirty traders. There's quite a few investors in there, but none of them are dirty traders. Doesn't that say a lot?
I used this very point in my book,
you
for heaven's sake.
Trader.
You're saying it like you're using it against me, my own point, which is that dirty traders... as you say, apart from George Soros, he's probably the most notable example of an extremely rich trader who sort of trades in and out of things. But other than that, you know, up in the top sort of 10 people in the world, you're looking at just Warren Buffett, who, as we know, is a buy and holder. But he's a different type of buy and holder. People who try and emulate his technique can't, because he buys entire companies and manipulates the companies by having influence over their management, which is not something that ordinary people can do. But anyway, point is, I agree with you, which is why I put it in my book, which is why I'm not a day trader, Justin.
You are.
You know, I've told you 100 times, I've bought and held stocks for years and years at times. I'm a trend follower. As long as a trend is upwards, then I'm generally in that trend.
I've seen your wardrobe. You're not.
Can we get on to the day's news before all the listeners just switch off?
Listen. People are interested in people. People relate to people. They don't relate to news. You know, that's why the big news stories, the people making the waves are people. The influencers are people. They relate. People relate to them. It's not about buildings or about a coin that doesn't exist. It's about the stories behind those. People relate to people. So hearing about your trades, how are you losing or winning, it's a lot better than just talking about what Bitcoin's doing. So we all know what Bitcoin's doing. I don't know what you're doing, though.
So here's what Bitcoin's doing for all the people that don't know, which probably most people. All right. First of all, the chief executive of JP Morgan says we are going to have to be involved with Bitcoin. Right. So that's quite a major admission, because it makes a big difference from what Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, said just a few years ago. He called it a fraud and worse than tulip bulbs. I've noticed people are sort of doing that tulip bulb comparison again now. But anyway. So that's what Jamie Dimon said a few years ago. But now Daniel Pinto, who's the co-president of JP Morgan, says that JP Morgan will have to be involved in cryptocurrency. But here's actually an interesting point, is that he says it's actually not time yet. He says that where are his exact words on that? He said that it's not time. Speaking of yes, client demand among their thousands of investment customers isn't yet showing much interest in Bitcoin, but he felt that sentiment would change. So that's interesting, because
that's
wrong. You get the impression that you know,
he's lying.
Investors are now extremely interested. You think he's lying?
Yeah.
You think he's underplaying it, maybe?
I've been telling you about this. My 74-year-old father is asking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, but he's not a JP Morgan customer. JP Morgan customers, I guess, it's like high net worth individuals.
My father is.
You know, family offices. Yeah.
Hang on. If they're not, then are they just sitting in their offices with no TV media on or something? What are they doing? Everyone, if you're not, the thing is, Bitcoin.
What the serious money isn't ready to gamble on Bitcoin.
They're idiots.
It's extremely volatile. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the point is extremely rich people tend to prioritize keeping their money over making more money, which is actually very sensible and what even lower net worth individuals should be doing. But instead, they often take silly risks and lose a lot of their money. But the idea is if you've already got a load of money, your number one priority is to keep that money. And then if you're able to make more money with it, then that's great too.
But okay, let me just say something.
Secondary consideration.
Okay,
so the reason why all these high net worth individuals aren't investing in Bitcoin yet.
I understand.
Because it's volatile. It's just
highly
volatile.
No, I understand. But listen, this is why Bitcoin has got become more popular. It's because some people said it wasn't even an asset, right? But now it is becoming an asset because, do you know what? It's self-fulfilling. And like when a lot of people said, oh, it's been talked about, it's the best performing asset in the last 10 years. And then you've got these big guys, like you say, the house officers or JP Morgan clients are saying, hang on, hey, John, hey. What are they calling up? What's the guy's name? Jamie Dimon? Is that the guy? What are they calling him?
Jamie Dimon.
Mm. Hey, Jamie, I've just been watching the news, yeah? And they say the best performing asset over the last 10 years is Bitcoin. How much exposure do we have to Bitcoin? And, well, we don't have any because, it's people don't trust it. What are you talking about? You don't trust it? It's the best performing asset in the last 10 years. Get some exposure to Bitcoin. You hear me? Otherwise, I'm pulling my account. And so that's the conversation he's having very regularly. So what Jamie Dimon's trying to do is talk the price down again, try and get a better price. Because if it's the best performing asset, people want exposure to it. So there are funds now outperforming other funds because they hold exposure to Bitcoin. Now, the funds that don't hold exposure to Bitcoin, they say, what are you doing? It's your job to find these assets that are outperforming everyone else. And you've not got the number one asset that's outperforming everything, Bitcoin. You shouldn't be a fund manager. You should be a fund manager, maybe. Just manage fun. Not the finances. You should be a clown. You should be a fun. This is a good one. You should be a fund manager. A clown. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe there is some of that going on. You could well be right that he's trying to talk the price down. I'll help him. Because here's another piece of news where I can help talk the price down. You may have heard that MasterCard, this was big news in the crypto world, MasterCard will begin facilitating cryptocurrency transactions in the year 2021, which is this year. And CNN Business, for example, there's a very kind of sober gentleman who's written an article on CNN Business. He looks like a very serious man, and he's got it completely wrong. He's written, Bitcoin's big moment. MasterCard jumps on the bandwagon. MasterCard is bringing Bitcoin to the checkout counter. Blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. Okay? I can tell you they got that wrong. MasterCard is not at the moment, according to what it said so far, planning to bring Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency that we know of into the fold because they've got very strict rules for what the qualifications are for a cryptocurrency that would operate on the MasterCard network. It has to have strong consumer protection, including privacy and security of consumer information and data. All stakeholders, including financial institutions, merchants, and mobile network operators, are to contribute to and benefit from the blockchain networks. And it must operate in compliance with applicable laws and regulations, including anti-money laundering laws. Now, as we know, Bitcoin is a decentralized cryptocurrency, probably cannot adhere to any of those stipulations. As a result, it seems very unlikely that MasterCard is going to bring any of the major cryptocurrencies onto its network. What it will do instead is bring government-backed stable coins. When you have your China coin, when you have your digital dollar, when the European Union gets its cryptocurrency act together, and maybe even a digital pound for Britain, all of those might operate on the MasterCard network, which is, let's face it, nowhere near as exciting from a sort of changing the world point of view as if Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies were allowed on the MasterCard network. So I don't think that that's going to happen. I think that that is fake news, sir. But there is one big piece of news this week which I'd like to discuss. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, what is it? Your trades?
Big, No. The big piece of news this week, which really will make a difference, is the news by BNY Mellon. BNY Mellon is, I think, the oldest bank on Wall Street. It's been around for hundreds of years. And most importantly, it is a custody bank, right? It holds people's assets safely for them. And it has announced that it will hold cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, in custody. Now, that is a big move because up until this point, there's the main thing holding institutions back from investing, you know, I guess the likes of JP Morgan who want to invest high net worth individuals' money. The main thing holding back financial institutions has been the question of custody. How do we keep this stuff safe? And there hasn't been a great answer up until perhaps this point. If BNY Mellon truly makes safe asset custody available for cryptocurrencies, then that's going to make a lot of financial institutions and big firms as well think, oh, well, this is good. This is, you know, proper safety. You're safe with BNY Mellon. So that is, I think, a possibly a big move that could change things significantly in the future.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it, yeah. I'm more interested in your trade.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. I mean, we know that. I mean, yeah, cryptocurrency going great, but stocks are doing just as well. Stocks have been amazing. Amazing time we've been having in the American stock market. British one obviously still lagging behind, as usual. So I'm still concentrating on America. But it is a bit of a game of chicken, as we've talked about before, because, you know, I wake up every morning thinking, oh, no, what if the markets crashed overnight? What if the American market crashes on the open? I mean, we've had some pretty sharp dips in recent weeks, which is kind of scary, but it just shook out the weak hands, as it were. And those of us who are longer term investors, Justin, like me, held on to our shares throughout those little dips. So, I've still got a lot.
What are you talking about? You're not a longer-term investor, are you?
Look, it's all relative. You know, I might not be the kind of guy who just holds throughout, you know, massive recessions. I didn't hold throughout the 2009 crash, hold all my shares. No, because I'm not that kind of investor. I'm not silly kind of investor. I'm the kind of investor who rides the big trends if I can and then gets out at the top, gets in near the bottom, that kind of thing.
I just thought of a good idea for a tweet. I find a good idea for a Twitter account or a TikTok account or Instagram account. It's called Hindsight Trader.
That would be great.
Literally just saying all the wins that they had afterwards, you know, just pretending he's had all the big wins and literally just call it Hindsight Trader or HS Trader, something like that. And got in there and it's done 1,000% in the last 2 weeks, yeah. And now I'm out. And when it's dropped, I got it right at the top and just do that all the time and see if people believe him. You get away with that on TikTok, you know?
It's basically kind of financial fantasy porn, isn't it?
But there's lots of young people. Stories, yeah.
Like sexy stories about how you bought right at the bottom and then sold it right at the top and that kind of thing. Like kind of almost like sexy novels you could write. Yeah. About good trades.
Yeah,
I'd
yeah.
buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, people are always, you know, they like, there's that couple on, was it Instagram? They say, listen, this is people think trading's hard. It's not hard. I just buy here, wait for it to go up here, then when it starts to fall, I sell. And I thought, it's that easy, really. And
the interesting thing about that guy, it was that guy and his girlfriend, wasn't it, on TikTok? They went viral. The interesting thing is the strategy actually, that's actually not bad, what he said, is it? It's like he says, I buy stocks when they're going up.
No, but hang on. No.
And he said when they stop going up, he sells. And actually what he's done there is, even though it's just one simple rule, it will already go a long way.
It's not easy though, because stocks don't. No.
Sells when they stop going up. That's the key thing.
No, I don't agree at all. If you are falling for that simplified garbage that he's saying, then I Glenn, you are inexperienced. That's like
he's
me saying
online trend following.
That's like me saying, right. Yeah. People think golf is hard. I just pick up a club, hit the ball and put it in the hole. You know, just hit it from here to there, it goes in the hole. What's the problem?
Saying it's simple is wrong. Yes, you're right.
It's not. A lot of emotion in the markets, yeah. And that completely. No stock goes up and down, straight up. It goes up, up, down, 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 up, 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 down, 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 and it's so easy to sell on several down days. You know, if you don't
stop.
Well,
it depends what the thing is he's looking at, doesn't it?
And time frame wise, what I'm saying is you can't tell the trend has changed or stopped going up on a time. If you're looking at a daily basis or a minute basis, you can't tell.
If you're looking at it on a daily basis, for example, let's take the dot-com boom of 2000. If you look at the NASDAQ chart on a daily basis, then you would actually see the chart slowly rolling over. You'd see that top forming in real time over the course of, what was it, about 1.5 years it took to actually form its top. So if he was a long-term investor or trader who said, long-term trader who followed trends and said, I sell when they stop going up, then it might have been a year or more if he was looking at a daily chart before he decided to sell the dot-com boom. That's what I'm saying. It all depends on the time frame you're looking at. If he's saying what he's saying, but he's only looking at 5-minute charts, then yeah, he's going to be in and out of the market the whole time and maybe not make that much money. But if he were looking at daily charts and had that same
way of
doing it, then he might actually make good money in the long run.
No, anyone who's taken in by that.
Well, daily charts, let's face it.
No, but anyone who's taken in by that and says, oh, if that's all I have to do, okay, I'll try it then, and thinks that's what it is, then why isn't everyone Warren Buffett, you know, that's how simple it is. It's not that simple.
Because people don't follow that rule. What he said.
Exactly. Why, though? Why? Glenn, buy low, sell high.
You know? Don't sell. Stops going
up. I can't believe you're giving him any
lower, and then they get scared, and then they buy some more, and then it gets lower, and then they panic more, and then they buy some more.
I know. Hang on a sec. No, you're driving me insane here, because what he's saying is, again, buy low, sell high. That's one advice I'm giving you in the stock market. Buy low, sell high. Now, you stick to that, right? First of all, it's relative. Where is the low? Where is the high? Because the high could be a lot higher than you where you sold it at, or the low could be a lot lower than you bought it at. So go down further. So, and then you've got emotional. We are emotional beings. You can tell from me now, getting wound up by this. We are emotional beings, and that makes it hard. So just taking something abstract, a sentence out, I buy it here, let it go up, and absolute BS. And anyone suckered in by that is an imbecile.
An imbecile.
It's getting me annoyed.
I can tell.
Proving we are emotional beings.
Yeah, we are. We're creatures of emotion, you and I, Justin. Creatures of passion.
Right. Anything else?
Those were the main pieces of news for your week. Let's have a look at where the price is right now. Bitcoin actually just...
We don't need that. People listen to the podcast. Maybe next week it'll be a different price then.
That's true.
The price of Bitcoin now, ladies and gentlemen, is...
within a whisker, $49,000.
$3,000. That's what it is. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so buy now.
Buy now, pay September. Remember that?
That'll be the rule soon in Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin now. So do you think people will be put off Bitcoin now because it's like, people's newbies. Noobs.
$50,000.
Yeah, they can't afford that.
When it reached $20,000, its previous peak in 2017, that was when you had the highest volume. So that was when the most people were buying and selling.
No, what I'm saying is, do you think people think...
bought Bitcoin at the top, at $20,000.
Glenda, what I'm saying is, do you think people think they have to have $50,000 to buy a Bitcoin?
People do sometimes ask me, can I buy fractions of it? So, yeah, I guess some people are operating under that assumption. But I would like to think that lots of people know you can buy fractions of Bitcoin in this day and age.
Okay, well, listen, 50,000, thereabouts, that's the top for now. Okay, it'll be coming over, rolling over soon and coming to a better price near you. That's what
I'm
saying.
How do you know? What if it just goes up and up and it's a lockout rally where
it could do, but I'm saying 50,000. I may be wrong. And frankly, I don't care.
You calling the top, Justin? Are you calling the top?
I'm not calling anything. I'm just saying 50,000, is it?
He's calling the top.
I've got my buy limits. I've got my alerts on when the RSI hits around about where is it, 40 or 50? That's fine when it goes there. I'll put another list. Well, I got one for 40 and I had a 50 one here. And okay. I'm not going to be interested until it hits that level. So.
All right. You just sit there then.
Well, you I want to sit there and wait for that. I'll get around and do other things in the meantime. You know, while you're going to have a shower and eat food and stuff and talk to the missus and play the dog and talk to the kids. I'm not going to sit there and wait for Bitcoin to hit 50 on the RSI. It's a waste of time, that. Anyway, listen, got to go. It's been lovely chatting with you, Glenn, about Bitcoin stuff, all right?
I've enjoyed myself.
Okay. Bye-bye, then.
Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're up five. Online Blockchain, PLC, up 67% to 80.5. At four, Avacta Group, up 16% to 180. At three, Scancell Holdings, 13%, 23.75. At two, it's Braveheart Investment, up 8.8 to 86.5. And at one, Canabo Group, that's a non-mover. That's KNB. I don't know what they do. Have they just been listed or what? Canabo Admission, First Day of Dealings. That's it. What do they do? The company has raised gross proceeds of $6 million through the overscribed placing. Canabo Research, the only medical-approved vaporization device at the vape pub, which provides metered dosages of proprietary cannabis oil formulations. Oh, okay. Sounds very familiar. Check that out there. Voxmarkets.co.uk. Let's look at the most read RSS. At five, Rambler Metals and Mining, oversubscribed placing for $10.5 million. At four, 40 Pharma, Microbiome Leaders panel event. At three, Avacta Group, result of initial evaluation, SARS-CoV-2. At two, Supply Up Recapital, update on restoration of listing. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, ABC 90TM rapid antibody test performance data. Check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.